Blog Talk Radio.
This is Our Common Ground. Thank you for joining us tonight for Talk That Matters. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you, bringing truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground.
Wonderful evening to all of our listeners. I'm Janice Graham, and thank you for joining us on Our Common Ground. My co-host tonight is Alpho of The Alpho Show, which airs on Blog Talk Radio each Saturday at 3 p.m. Good evening, Alpho.
Well, good evening, Janice, and how are you this evening?
I see you're still working on that turkey.
Well, somewhat. But no, the turkey's gone, long gone.
So how did you survive on this news cycle week?
Well, I did take the Thanksgiving week off. It's been very difficult and disappointing for those progressive liberals. And I mean, it's just another saga and a continuing, I would call it a story of disappointment after disappointment.
Well, I think that a lot of important things are going on. I call them underground messages. It was interesting that we started off the week this week with the president announcing that there would be a freeze on federal, the civilian federal workforce pay increases for the next 2 years. That just sounds like a ding in a very, very large, a pebble hitting a very, very large sea. How's it sound to you?
Oh, I look at it a little more realistically. He did something. He did something that he could have waited a day. Had he just waited one day, you know,
you're absolutely
on the 29th.
Right. After his meeting.
Well, right. He did that just before the day before his meeting. So he gave up something to bargain with once again, just as he did in the health care and in the banking bills and the stimulus package. He gave up. He compromised before the negotiations started. So therefore, he was left with nothing to give up of any value except for moving in their direction. I mean, it's a continuing saga. It's over and over
but that
and over again.
That was a very bad start of his public negotiations with the Republicans. I call it a complicit compromise. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, and we want to thank all of you for being out there in our listening audience. I'm Janice Graham, and Alpha of The Alpha Show is my host tonight, and we hope that you will join us in this discussion of today's, the week's news and events. And what we want to do is we want to look at the black truth of the events at Our Common Ground. We're going to be talking about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. We're going to be talking about the president's list of pardons for 2010. We're going to be looking at the now-censored Representative Charlie Rangel of New York and talking a little bit about Wesley Snipes going to jail, black unemployment and this Congress of No, and you can bring to us your agenda. And we want to ensure that we are putting an Afrocentric eye to what happens to us in politics, what is happening to us in the economy, what is happening to us. I cannot come on the air and not talk about education and not talk about black children. We want to greet the people in who have joined us for this broadcast in our chat room, Black Unity, Amon Ra Temple, Black Unity host, House Music Lover, JY, those are two regular fans, and Jackson, Tennessee, SOCM. You're listening to Our Common Ground. And thank you so much for joining us this evening. That's our agenda. We hope that you will bring to us your agenda. 347-838-9852. Bring it on. It is time for a discussion and a spirit of liberation.
But when I leave, you can remember I said the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the big.
Listening to Our Common Ground. This is Saturday Night Open Mic. I'm Janice Grant, and I'll be listening for you.
One inch of snow in Chicago.
Well, it's turned more to like 3.5 to 4 inches now.
Uh-huh,
we
uh-huh.
had a winter storm watch for till midnight. Now it's till 9 a.m. in the morning. So we're getting more, and once it gets to that point where it ends, then we'll go out there with our little ruler and see how many inches fell.
Mm-hmm. It's been a beautiful day here in Boston, and we hope that all of you out there had a beautiful day wherever you are. You know, Alpha, one of the things that always occurs to me is that we have been a people who have lived and survived, created our bridges that are bringing us safely across through music, the words of inspiration and leadership, people like James Baldwin, the works and the activism of so many of our ancestors, and that when we look at all of the things that are going on in our country, when we see the erosion of both civil and human rights in this country, we have a foundation that other people do not have in this country. And I think that one of the things that we ought to do is to be grateful for what has been left and given to us in this country. And sometimes we need to stop, and we need to thank James Baldwin, and we need to thank Miles Davis, and we need to thank Whitney Houston. We have switches, you know, like a switch that you can just turn on to renew our spirit. And I think we take that for granted. There is the spirit of our ancestors is all around us. But if we're not steeped in understanding a consciousness about our African spirit within. There is, I believe that there is something in our brains and our genetic makeup and our DNA that takes us back to a time where we were stronger and better than we are today. And that is there for a reason, and I think sometimes we don't always tap into it. Before we get started, and Alpha, what's your agenda for tonight? What's on your mind?
Well, Janice, what's on my mind more than anything is simply the landscape of our political discourse here in this country. And you know, it's for the last 2 years, I simply can't get away from just how easy it is for the electorate of this country to be duped, to acquiesce to the lies, and just the blunt and blatant disrespect to this black man in the White House. Now, people can say he's not black. People can say, you know, you can say what you want. But I don't think anyone can deny the level of disrespect, the level of bigotry, the level of racism, the rise of the militias, the rise of the so-called Confederate, the rise of states' rights, this whole nine yards that you never would have seen with a white man under the Republican Party.
Well, one of the things, too, and I think that we have to check ourselves on it, is that I looked at the way in which our elected officials move to humiliate Charlie Rangel. And I'm telling all of you out there, bottom line, it wasn't just about Charlie Rangel this week. It was a message to you, and that is get on the back of the bus. Your time has come, and it is over. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But I think that also, especially for my generation, and for those of you who don't know my generation, I'm the generation of black nationalism and black liberation and black power. Get that. Understand that. That's where I come from. I grew up in a race home where race was everything. Because in order to have dignity, in order to understand the concept of NAMO, to understand the concept of respect, you had to understand the concept of race. So here I am, standing tall and still in this struggle. But one of the things that I think all of us are suffering from, one of the reasons that, you know, like I can get madder than a mad hatter at my sister. And my daughter. I get more angry at them. My rage is so much more intense with them because she is my sister and she is my daughter. So when I get angry with them, it's a deep anger because who she is and what they are to me is deep. And I think that is what we are experiencing with President Obama, that when it's like a child who you have given every opportunity, put a silver spoon in their mouths and moved them on and held their hand, and they become a disappointment. It's deep. It's painful. And that is one of the things that we have to deal with in looking at this president. But the other is the enemies that surround him. Now, that's rage. That's absolute rage. But we need to talk about that. And what I'd like to do, Alpha, before we start talking, is set the stage take some minutes before we start taking calls, and we want to ask you to call us at 347-838-9852 and ask you, what are you angry about? What would you like this president to do? What do you think WikiLeaks is all about? What's your response to the censorship of Representative Charlie Rangel? Why is Wesley Snipes going to jail and everybody else, entertainers like Willie Nelson, were allowed to pay their whatever they owed the IRS? Charlie Rangel was not given the opportunity, even though he did correct his problems with the IRS, he still came up on ethics charges. That's what we want to hear from you. What's on your mind? What is making you angry? Where are your disappointments? What are you going to do about it? So here's the stage.
You said, Tavis, what is that word about promise?
Barbara Jordan, what the American people want is simple. They want an America as good as its promise.
Well, America is no good at all. If you have made a promise that you don't keep, what are you? You are a liar. Did they promise the Native Americans? Did they write it in treaties? Did they fulfill it? Did they promise us 40 acres and a mule? Did they fulfill it? Brown versus the Board of Education. 50 years later, where's the promise? Is it fulfilled, or are we still in segregated schools? The right to vote, you got it? But the minute they gave it to you, they were finding ways to take it back from you. Can't you open your eyes and see the house is burning? We are dying every day, and we're in a hell of a condition because we've made a covenant with a government that is death itself, with a people that have lied to us, deceived us, and murdered us, and rubs us good on one side and kicks us in the behind on the other. You are a deceived people. If you don't have the testicular fortitude to say what needs to be said, then sit down and stop trying to say you speak for our people and the hurt of the poor. Now I close. Excuse me. I think I'm getting excited. I applaud this covenant, but it demonstrates our impotence. Because in many of the chapters, it keeps going back to not only what we do, but really, we start looking to the same liar that has continued to promise but never fulfilled. And that's why God said, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, forgive your sins and heal your land. So don't look to them, look to God, look to yourself. Break your covenant with hell and death, then make a covenant with Black America, and let's help implement a roadmap that will free us. And the whites that will be free can be freed by this. The Mexicans, the Hispanics can be freed by this roadmap. We are a universal people. But those at the top, they're on their way to hell. And if I got any power, I want to push them into hell as fast as I can. We are a full nation now, and we got to stop thinking like Negroes and colored people and shines and tambones, and start thinking like free men and women who don't want to live on a plantation no more. I got to go.
Is Our Common Ground. We'll be right back to take your call.
Alpha, okay, let me try to break it down, Alpha, and maybe you can help me out here.
I don't know.
We got a lot of people.
I don't know if I can help you out with this one, Janice. You know, you start playing Louis Farrakhan, and all of a sudden,
the brother minister has been breaking it down for us for years, and we're
exactly.
still running around talking about the black president. Did you hear what he said?
He's absolutely
right. We need to stop thinking like Negroes and start acting like a black nation. Doc Don, do you understand what I'm saying to you? Am I making it clear?
Well, the honorable minister has always stood tall, told the truth, and look at how he's been treated in the
absolutely. They did the same thing to him that they're doing to President Barack Obama.
Exactly, exactly.
And
anytime.
We are allowing it to happen.
Exactly. And you've got...
We are allowing it to happen all over again.
Chimes, like the Black Caucus, who are sitting silent. You know, Janice, we talked about the Joe Wilson incident, and... Rather than everybody be gassed and appalled, the president should have shut down that speech and had him removed. The Black Caucus should have been up in arms today, well, this week when Representative King referred to him as urban. And we have to stop ignoring these dog whistles of racism and these code words for racism that they are so willing to say now, that now it doesn't, they don't even hesitate to say it because it has been so accepted by people like Limbaugh and Beck, and they've set this table, and now they're looking to serve you. I would call it disrespect and delegitimize this president.
Well, if you think about it, W.E.B. Du Bois, if you think about it, Reverend Martin Luther King. If you think about it, Ida B. Wells. If you think about it, anyone who has stood up for us, we have turned our backs on. And you all cannot say, nobody can tell me I was there. Black people opposed Reverend Martin Luther King when he began to see the global system of white supremacy as it stood. Black America became, first of all, at the very beginning. I mean, Reverend Martin Luther King, and you all have to understand the history of all of this, used the system of white supremacy, the people in power, used black people to speak against Martin Luther King. Somebody wake LBJ up and ask
preachers
him.
No less. They use black
exactly.
ministers against
the same
Martin
preachers
King.
Who have gone silent because somebody gives them $10,000 a year from a faith-based fund in the government. It's all about, you know, they run up against people who are poor, uneducated, and have children and need food stamps. But they won't go up against the same institution that gets food stamps from the Department of Faith-Based whatever initiatives.
Well, that's what happened.
We have got to see that we keep repeating it. You know, I am a big fan. For those of you who know me, I am a big fan of Battlestar Galactica. I mean, I watch the episodes over and over and over, and one of the things that gets said on Battlestar Galactica in every season is what does it say? This has happened before and it will happen again. Look at how poor black farmers. The Pigford settlement should have been settled in 1997 and it just got settled 2 weeks ago. And they're still making noise about it.
And how many have died without seeing a dime? How many have...
Exactly.
And you have these white folks King and Bachman who come out and Beck and they come out and they talk about reparations as the Black Caucus sits silently. And
we don't say anything because we are ashamed and don't understand reparations.
Well, the first thing is...
Anybody in here, anybody listening to me that's a member of NCOBRA? Hello?
Nobody understands.
I don't like to be on the air beating people down, but at some point, we have, as the brother minister said, we have to start acting like a Black nation. And Brother Maurice Muhammad is in the chat room, and he's calling it's called treason. Absolutely. Absolutely. We lost Malcolm. We lost Reverend King. We lost Marcus Garvey. We lost Ida B. Wells. We lost W.E.B. Du Bois. Look at James Baldwin. He couldn't even live in this country. Look at Richard Wright. He couldn't even live in this country. He was a damn Harvard graduate and had to become an expatriate. And those that came to a consciousness understand, because I tell you, I was flipping through my passport the other day, you know, because when you think about it, at the end of the show tonight, and I want everyone to stay with us, the last 6 minutes of the show, we're going to replay a commentary done by Lawrence O'Donnell on the sentencing of the police officers in New Orleans who killed three people on the Danziger Bridge. And if you think about it, in this full week of assault after assault on the interest of Black people, if you look at the fact that the only caveat, the only even piece of justice that we got in the Oscar Grant case was this man cannot, his bail was withdrawn, his bond was withdrawn, and he has to be in jail before he is sentenced. That's the only caveat we got with a young man, 21 years old, shot in the back while he was lying on the ground in a public place. Last week, a woman who represents a national African-American journalism organization was at a Hampton Inn in downtown Washington, D.C., waiting for a guest that was staying there to come downstairs, and the hotel manager put her out. We continue. We continue over and over to swallow injustice. And you know what, Alpha? Our ancestors are not dancing above our heads. People died so that we could stand in dignity. My question is, when are we going to be in a place that honors, you know, like, sometimes I get really annoyed, Alpha. And maybe it's my age. Maybe I'm getting too old to do this. I've been broadcasting since 1985. And I know the power of Black people getting together and talking over the airwaves, reaming it out, looking it up and down, looking down into the black hole and pulling out the mess and trying to figure out its chemistry and its utility. But after a while, we have to start talking and we have to stop talking and we have to start doing some things. Now, I don't know, Alpha. Let's talk about what's going to happen in January with our president. You tell me.
Well, as we've come to know him, he is a blue dog. He is a centrist. He's not the fighter that we hope for or that we wish he was. As wishy-washy as he was in the primary, as far as simply taking it, he took it over and over and over again. Maybe it's because he knew he had the perfect storm, and the perfect storm has turned on him. Now there's a perfect storm that makes him a one-term president. His base is fractured, and seriously fractured. I have listened to progressive talk radio, and 10, 15 to 1, people who are calling in are saying they are done with him. So what does that lead us? Even right now in this atmosphere of where we are, you know where that leads us? That leads us to people, they either won't show up, or when they begin to speak about primary, we got to primary him, we got to run somebody against him. Well, guess what? You run somebody against him, win, lose, or draw, it diminishes his base even more. And you have people, you remember how we had to coax and literally beg those people who call themselves Democrats to support him, those Hillary Clinton supporters. Well, I guarantee you that in the upcoming 2012, let's say he's primary, and let's say it's Hillary Clinton again, she will win. She will win because people have lost confidence in him. He will not fight. And I understand people saying, well, we've got to get his back. We got his back, and he got him elected. And then the disappointment started. This president has done a great deal of things. And let's look at what he's done. The health care bill, it's not single payer. It's not public option. It's a Republican health care bill, and the Republicans are still against it.
Well,
look at the banking bill. It wasn't a standalone consumer protection scenario where you had that, you know, consumer protection agency that stood away from the Fed. It stands with the Fed as a component of the Fed because he compromised, he capitulated, he gave in. The best thing that he has done is taking the banks out as middlemen for loans to the students, the college students. And that is the best thing he's done. I mean, at some point in time, you have to look at it for what it really is. You know, they have a list of 244 things that he has accomplished. Okay, but what has he really done that means a great deal for the African-American community, the liberal progressives out there? What has he done for Don't Ask, Don't Tell? What has he done for the DREAM Act? What has he done for immigration reform, even though most of the Republicans were for immigration reform, and now they're against it because he's for it. The absolutely not, if it's going to give him a win. Look at the START Treaty. The START Treaty. That's for our, you know, the nation's defense. That's for everybody's well-being. No. They are for no. And what happens when they say no? They are rewarded with a victory. Not because they stood on the side of anything right, but because they were able to carry the message with hundreds of surrogates who came out on a daily basis and simply pounded that lie home over and over and over again. And they told the lie with hundreds of people, different people, the Newt Gingriches, you know, the Liz Cheneys, the Michelle Bachman. How many times have you seen Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid in front of a camera as compared to Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Mike Pence, Price, Ryan? You can go down the list. The Black Caucus has basically struck and taking a fetal position. All you see is a Maxine Waters on occasion. You see Clyburn. You see Lewis. You see Barbara, whatever her name is. But on a whole, you don't see
Barbara
them
Lee.
Maybe once a month. And that is the problem. The problem is surrogates and for not. Now you can't tell me that these media outlets will turn you down. And if they turn you down, as elected representatives, simply hold a press conference. And if you've got to draw the attention by saying something outrageous, such as Representative King is a racist, and he spoke in cold dog whistle racism from the floor. You don't think that they would cover that? And that is the problem. There are no surrogates. And people talk about, they don't have one thing.
I would argue that there's another problem. And that problem is that we haven't what is the White House mission statement? It, with Reagan, with Clinton, George W. Bush, we were all clear as to a consistent and compelling field theory or central theme. You know, for instance, Reagan was bent on taming government and the Russians and unleashing America's force for good into the world. George Bush, Clinton, was focused on, like a laser beam, on the economy. George Bush was just fighting terror. You know, without a clear narrative, a good policy is politically ephemeral. And this president has got to tell us, in no uncertain terms, what his mission statement is, and we have not gotten it, nor have we demanded it.
Well, Dennis, what could your mission statement be when you walk into the Oval Office and on there on the desk in the Oval Office is this big doo-doo smoothie of the collapsed economy, of this wrecked system of trickle down that has failed miserably, of this rising debt, without two wars on the books, without two tax cuts on the books. Well, he had no. What has been his mission? His mission has been to help regain the numbers on Wall Street, and rather than him not, so you know, that is you. To everyone wants to talk about the people in Congress and how they've held him back. He is simply not doing what he can do. And what he can do is to send real regulators into these banks for real audits, because they are not 100 cents on the dollar. Then they can be declared insolvent. And you either take or you force them to loan to small businesses. The business community, the corporations are sitting on this money. They are purposely not hiring so that this economy can go further into the ditch. As hard as he tries, he cannot win over the business community. He's anti-business, but they have flourished with $1.66 trillion, the highest in history of this nation. But he is anti-business, and they continue to pound that. If you notice, they sent 3, 4, 5 CEOs to the cameras, and they got FaceTime and a platform to say that, to talk about one word, uncertainty, and how we've got to get, you know, these tax breaks that have been proven to fail. And instead of this president going along with public opinion, the people of this country are for ending the tax cuts to the wealthy. He's about to cave on that. The people in this country were for a public option or single payer. He caved on that. The people in this nation are against these wars. He's caved on that. So, I mean, when you talk about a main point, a theme that he has, he's too busy trying to resurrect, trying to rebuild what has been destroyed by an ideology of trickle down, of tax cuts for the millionaires, of corporatism. And him being a blue dog, he's not going to hurt those conservatives.
You're listening to Our Common Ground, Saturday night open mic. Just damn, Alpo. Our number is 347-838-9852. We're going to go to our phones. And 405, you're on the air. I respect you. Hotep.
Hotep, this is Doc Don, Janice,
the
and
Don.
Alpo.
Oh, my brother.
Yes, I think that Janice hit the nail on the head when she first introduced us in her introduction in reference to the word erosion. And as we know, when we see erosion, it takes place through the weathering process, whether it's quick or whether it's over a period of time. Everything eventually erodes. I think this government has been in a state of erosion for quite some time during my lifetime. And as we can see, it has been broken down through the process of the seeking of power and personal gain and wealth by countries and behind that, the individuals. And so, as I indicated earlier, when we see that the enemy or the I don't want to say necessarily say enemy or enemy, but maybe I might use that before us, and they're coming in to conquer us, then we must learn of them. And once we learn of them, we must prepare to deal with what we have and prepare a defense. And Barack Obama got into a position. The country was ready for change. We thought we had us a offense with him. He had his mandate. When he ran for office, he said what we wanted him to say and what needed to be done. He quoted our great ancestors such as Dr. King and others in his quest for power, and so he got it. But when he got it, it's obvious to me that he does not know how to utilize it for the purposes for which he was elected. And as a result, it's just like Alpo said, he has a fractured base, an eroded base.
Well, Don, one of the things that I think is that not only is it fractured, it is questionable at this time. Who is support? I mean, if you listen to I listen to talk radio almost from 6:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night, 5 days a week. And all you hear across the airwaves is the anger at this man. And I also want to ask you to comment on my position is that we better stop worrying about what the government is doing and start looking at what we are doing in our own communities locally, because all politics is local. Because if John Kerry doesn't show up in the Senate in the next month or so, as far as I'm concerned, he's missing in action. That's my senator. Your boy Scott Brown. Hello?
Were you going to say something, Alpo?
Say what?
Were you going to say something?
No. That was Janice.
Oh, okay. Well, Janice, you know, it appears to me that in answer to your question, what are we going to do, and it's local, I think that's a correct analysis. We have to begin at a local level to begin to raise the consciousness of those among us as to what the problem is and what must be done. And what must be done is that we have to unify ourselves as a collective body of citizens to deal with the situation that we presently face. If we don't get unity among us, we know what the problem is, but we are fractured within our own community. I don't know if we can ever try to get some collective body together where we can wield our power. We have tremendous power of the purse. We can boycott things like PayPal. That's put this the WikiLeaks one of that took them off their financial agreement that they had with PayPal, won't renew it with them, and then kicked them off for some alleged violation, and Amazon for not allowing them to have the power to put out the information about these lies that this government has been involved in. And so if we can't unify and deal with this issue as a people, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. We have all kinds of leaders in the local community, Janice. We have the NAACP leadership. We got Black Power Movement. We got the New Black Panthers. We got the churches, which has normally been our power base, but now look at the churches. You got the Eddie Long types, you got the T.D. Jakes types, you got the prosperity preachers, and you know, we are going in so many different directions, just like I indicated before. They broke Africa up by dividing the kingdom, and so we're so divisive that I don't know if we can put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but that's what needs to be done.
One of the things you brought up, the issue, Don, of WikiLeaks. Today, the State Department, this afternoon, the State Department are telling students. Now, if you will recall, everything, that major change that has happened in this government in terms of public policy in the last 100 years has come as a result of student process. Student protests. And the State Department is telling students not to discuss WikiLeaks on Facebook or Twitter or else, and I'm not sure what the else is, but we are coming as close to fascism in this country as we ever had. And I'm wondering, you know, one of the things you talk about is we keep talking about the Obama administration. But all of this started, this is the result, all the way going back to the Reagan administration. This whole notion of trickle-down economy is a Reaganism. And even his economic advisor, David whatever his name is, and everybody hated him at the time because he built this trickle-down economics, is saying that these tax cuts for anybody is not good for this economy. The other is, I just want to hear people's opinion about the fascist way in which our government is being run. Because nobody's talking about, if you think the White House is impotent, then you need to get some Viagra for this cabinet. Has anybody heard from any cabinet member in the last 6 months, other than Vilsack, who had to deal with the Shirley Sherrod issue? Anybody heard from any cabinet members? Did they leave or die or go into some kind of coma? Those are the people who decide what initiatives are prioritized in our communities. If you're talking about HUD or Health and Human Services or the Justice Department, you are talking about the cabinet. And we won't even – let's please not start alpha on Eric Holder.
I can't help it. I can't help it. Damn it.
So, you know, this government is not of the people or for the people. It is a government for the corporations. It is a government that upholds the mission of Wall Street and the Bank of America. And who, I mean, this. If I look at the WikiLeaks files, And for those of you who would really like to look at a review, you know, you can't go through all of that stuff. I'm posting in the chat room at salon.com. They have kind of summarized the 10 most important WikiLeaks revelations from Iran to Yemen to Israel to North Korea to the UN and what the leaked documents tell us about the world. But we have come so close to, we're coming very close to becoming a fascist society.
Well, when the State Department tells the young people not to speak about the WikiLeaks on Facebook, you know, that's, you know, the two drops of these WikiLeaks so far. There was slight, there was limited outrage when the first batch dropped, and they talked about how it was revealing state secrets and hurting the troops. When the second batch dropped and it turned out to be a great deal of gossip and a great deal of things that really should not have been classified as secrets. But the biggest drop of all is coming about the Federal Reserve and the banks. And that is what's putting this man's life. That's why he's a dead man. But he has already, his lawyer has already disseminated that there are 3 million WikiLeaks waiting to drop if this man meets a untimely demise, and which he will. I'm predicting he'll be dead within a month. And you know, by any means necessary, they will kill him. But these 3 million WikiLeaks that are waiting to drop need to drop in a hurry. They need to drop unredacted, because he was going to drop them redacted. But the threat on his life, and this is the threat he's made, his lawyer says that there are 3 million, and they will drop unredacted, which will really have a serious problem for the banks, for the Federal Reserve, for the New World Order and the globalism as we know it. We will get ready. We will see how the Federal Reserve has basically been running this global bank, and the American taxpayers have paid for it. This is the biggest threat as the WikiLeaks drops on these bankers and the banks, the Bank of America, all of them. Look at
Don,
the.
We're gonna have to get to a break, but I know you want to wrap up, summarize some of your thinking here.
Yes, I just wanted to say this that we, when you look at the WikiLeaks that you had put out, you know, the publication there. And the 10 points that they have there, 10 most, whatever the points are, diplomats as spies, secret war in Yemen, Iran and North Korea, Gates skeptical on Iran attack. It's all a quest, again, for power. Power and the precious, precious resources needed for these countries. And it's a race. And as a result of that, we're going to continually face the type of autocratic government that we have been seeing, and with this Patriot Act and with these other legislation, we have no rights. You know, they've pretty much told us, even through WikiLeaks, what if he's exposing this stuff? But what's happening? He has no one to come to his aid. And go ahead, and I'll wrap up. I'm getting off, Janice. I'll just say this and let you talk. And therefore,
okay.
we need to review what you have here, and understand it. And personally, you know, we must, I feel, as a people, really get our young people involved. We have to educate them as to what world they really live in, what government they are really under. We need to get to them from when they're first born through the third, fourth grade, and just fill their mind with nothing but things that's going to enrich them and their lives and help them survive what they have ahead of them. I have most of my life gone, but, you know, we need to leave them with something in order to survive what they face. And I feel that it's not too good a future for them, but we can prepare them as best we can because that's all we have is our youth. And thank you, Janice, and very much, Alpho. I'll be listening.
Take care.
Thank you, Don, for your call. Don has made some very important points. Our number is 347-838-9852. This is Open Mic Night for Our Common Ground, 615. We see you there. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls.
President Barack Obama, stand and fight. You can win against the politics of no and no idea. You can win against obstruction. Yes, you can.
We still too often feel that we must go to them to ask permission to be us. We still think we have to ask authorization whether or not we can tell our story our way. We still think that we can only build the America that we want by getting permission from them to have access to make it what we want it to be. The reality of it is that we, America, wouldn't be what it is had we not taken the initiative and the prerogative to make it our way despite what they wanted us to do. With the issue of miseducation, our whole, my primary belief is that our greatest sense, our greatest disempowerment has been the systematic effort to make us unconscious of our conscious power. That somehow we don't know our real power. We don't know who we are. I think that
you know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Common ground. Talk that matters. We know what to do with radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
Common Ground Saturday night open mic. My co-host is Alpha. I'm Janice Graham. The number is 347-838-9852. Alpha, you know, one of the things that Don's comments brought to mind is that most people don't understand that the unemployment rate is at 9.8%, but in those figures, you're talking about part-time workers. And the Republicans are using the unemployment figures to just beat this beleaguered president. And we have to think through. If I looked at some figures that said that African American unemployment rate was at 11.7, and it has its implications and statistical base, but the 9.8 that everybody has in their head, you know, that's like, if you think about it, in the city of Boston, we have 56 colleges and universities in the city. And if half of the student body of every one of those colleges and universities gets a part-time job and then decides not to work, they're part of that 9.8% figure. And we have got to understand that as we listen to the wrangling over the jobs. And people should be calling John Boehner's office now and saying, where are the jobs? You folks took over in the House. Where are the jobs? We're going to go to our phone, 615. You're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Peace and blessings, Sammy. Thank you for allowing me on. The thing that I'm looking at is that, you know, we do understand just by listening, we all do understand that we're not getting what we should get out of the system. And ever since that we integrated into the system, we've just been worse off.
Oh,
I mean, when
brother,
we were,
opening up the big Pandora's box.
Yes, ma'am. And that's the reality that we have to live in. We were much better off. You know, we had the Black Star Line. We had the Black Wall Street. We had, you know, Nation of Islam with the airports and all that we were doing fine. But as soon as we integrated in with this beast, look at where we got now. We don't have anything.
Black
males barely graduating from high school. Only 47% of them graduating with high school education. This is crazy. The conspiracy to destroy us, we got to come up on out of this thing.
We have been bamboozled.
Exactly.
As Brother Malcolm would say.
Exactly.
Let's try to break this down because, you see, a brother, and I believe you're a brother Maurice Mohammed from the chat room.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you, brother. Assalamu alaikum. For joining us tonight and Hotep.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's break this down. Alpha, see, it's important for us to get to the nitty gritty because most black people do not relate the new road, the new journey. Mm. And as Brother Muhammad has pointed out so eloquently and so passionately, in our demise. See, Brother Muhammad, I was born and grew up in Jim Crow South.
Yes, ma'am.
Which was the training ground for me to be able to survive and struggle through the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you learned some lessons. Our children are not learning any lessons, and the adults have forgotten the lessons that they did learn.
Exactly. That's exactly
I look at our president, part of his problem, and I have said this over and over. Alpha, you testify, I've said this over and over. I will not call him a black president. He's an African-American president.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because he never learned the lessons of being black in America.
Exactly.
He grew up in Hawaii with the mindset that he was somehow exotic. His father was African. His mother was white. He grew up in a home where the majority of the people were white. He went to a school where he was the only African-American child, so he was exotic. And I have talked over and over with people who went to school with him at Harvard Law School. I have talked with two people who went to school with him in Hawaii. And a number of people that went to school with him at Columbia. And he was always exceptional.
Right.
Well, guess what? The white supremacist system in this society has labeled him unexceptional, and they have whipped his butt.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Brought him
exactly.
to his knees, demonized him, and made him weak because
mm-hmm.
he didn't get the opportunity to learn the lessons.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
it would have been easy when I was at MIT to just go along with my white classmates and not start problems and raise issues and of race and class and status.
Mm-hmm.
But I had learned some lessons, and that is that there is no reward for going along to get along.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly
and there's
right.
something else, and I want to go back to your, you know, I just had, I have this discussion. My mother is 85 years old, lives alone. She still drives a little station wagon, and I'm very proud that she is independent and does her thing. But I have this conversation with her all the time. Even this evening, I was talking to her brother, Muhammad, about the whole issue of women wearing pants in the church. Well, she
mm-hmm.
started that conversation. And then she went on to say, I remember there was a time when teachers dressed up.
Mm.
And a lot of teachers dressed up because they felt that they were modeling for the black children who didn't have
mm.
that kind of model. When I grew up, Brother Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
there were loads of doctors and nurses and teachers and even bus drivers that you wanted to be like.
Mm.
You had no idea how much money they made, and some of them didn't have a big house, but they all had something to offer, and they were offering it. Our children in our communities, we are too our communities have become disfigured.
Exactly. Exactly. That's 100%. I know when I was growing up and, you know, my father wasn't there at the house, I grew up looking up to white folks on TV, you know, wanting to be like Ric Flair and all these bad guys. So I'm going to school cutting up and being just as bad as I see these white folks being, because that's what
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking. That's the norm. That's what we should be. You know, ooh, we got to be
mm-hmm.
like white folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to be like white folks so much that we hate the person that we are and don't even know the value of who we are. You know,
mm-hmm.
and being integrated into that system, we lost a whole lot. We lost the knowledge of ourselves. When you have it in the communities, and you had it where my grandmother was telling me, she said, you know, the doctors and the teachers and all of us, they lived on the same street. You know, there wasn't nobody
mm-hmm.
living,
mm-hmm.
you know, way out here, and they took care of everybody. You know, we was a real family, but then soon as everybody got in with that integration and boom, everything split up and people was gone doing this and gone doing that, and we done lost who we are.
By limited choice, Brother Muhammad, by limited choice,
mm-hmm.
I was able as a kid to walk down the street and stop in on the black grocery store and pick up eggs and whatever we needed in our house. Black people shopped at the black grocery store. Black
mm-hmm.
people, I could stop two doors down and have a conversation with a man who attended the University of London or someplace in London, and he was a black man, a tall, very handsome black man. When I was a little girl, I was enamored by him because of the way he talked, because he talked to me as though I was a real person and not a little kid. And he was a tailor.
Mm.
And he taught me geography.
Mm.
Just talking about his travels.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could walk down the street and stop in. I mean, I was just one of those kids that was kind of like go down the street and talk to all the adults, sit on the porches
right.
of people who picked oranges for a living, and then go across the street and talk to a person who had a master's degree from Columbia and was the principal of the high school. You see, all of those things gave us character in our community. I go into parts of the what is supposed to be called the black community of Boston, and it's all white people who have bought up the land and built condominiums, and black people who sold what they had for, what do you call it, Alpha? A temple's slither of gold.
Absolutely.
We gave it away, and the question is, how do we reclaim it?
Right.
Well,
you know, I read in the 1967 report that they did on the civil disorders that were happening in America and why the riots were going off. And it said in one of the, they gave three answers to fix the problem. And one of the answers was that they let a substantial number of Negroes integrate into the white society to let everybody else see that it works. But we're not going to do it with everybody, but just a substantial number so that they can see that it works, so the rest of us can be lulled to sleep on this lie that this democracy thing is working. You know, it's crazy because we got these rich people, we got Oprah, and we got Obama, and we got these senators and mayors and governors and lawyers, and we're looking, but then when it's supposed to come down to us, there's no way for us to get it. So we keep looking and wanting to get this. I want the house and the home and this and that. We see everybody else getting it, but we want to get it, but the avenues are cut. Then we resort to crime, and then next thing you know, see, they ain't no good, and they go back to Bill Bennett where he says, well, if you want to cut the crime rate, kill black babies. The whole system is just set up for our destruction, and we have to come on out of it. And the only way to come out is not to continue to fall for the lie. We got to be telling the truth and say, no, this ain't working, and it ain't working because this is what you're doing to us. And it's time for us to regroup and pull our resources and do something for self. And then we hit them with a demand and say,
you're
going to do it. Yes, ma'am.
When I did terrestrial radio, I was part of the Stop the Violence campaign with the Nation of Islam. And one of the things that just simply continues to perplex me is that we are choosy. We are so choosy about our truth, where it comes from. But when it comes to white people, like these progressive organizations and these liberal organizations, and I will say it over and over to black women all the time, one of your enemies are the liberal and progressive white women who have taken the opportunity that was configured for you and used it to their own interest and banished you from the place.
Exactly.
So I'm perplexed by that. And I know, and I continuously say to my audience all the time, well, you know, we are an injured people. We have many injuries, and we have so much pain that needs to be healed. Why aren't we in the business of healing each other?
Exactly.
Why are we always in the business? You know, it's just like this president. I don't know where this notion comes from. When I was growing up, my mother and father said, if you are not like those kids, the kids that you say you are not like, why are you with them? Association breeds what, Brother Muhammad?
Familiarity. Yes, ma'am.
That's right.
Yep.
So, you know, we know the truth. Alpha, We know the truth. We know that we have sat, we sat by and allowed for the past 20 years for black children to grow up and become 18 years old and they are illiterate. And
mm-hmm.
we said nothing. Our silence is killing us.
That's
our
right.
silence. I mean, I see Barack Obama as an opportunity for us. I see
mm-hmm.
him as an opportunity. But we sit silently and we allowed our opportunity to slip through our fingers because we didn't stand up for accountability from him. Because
exactly.
but for us, they would not have considered him at all.
Exactly.
And the
exactly.
And, you know, Janice, we speak about our youth. And you said it, we've sat back for 20 years. And right now, I can say, I can honestly say that there are very few people who are in our chat room, who are in their mid and upper 30s. And I'm not saying no one is, but the majority of the people in this chat room are people who understand and people who are of that generation. And when we begin to talk about the young people, the people who we are trying to reach, I can't go without saying that these people aren't listening. They're not listening to their history. They don't care about what that those politicians are doing in Washington. Those are the I've got 12 grandchildren, and I try every time I speak with them to get them on board, to get them interested, to get them involved. They listen, and they can't wait to end that conversation so they can go back to doing whatever the hell it is that they're doing. And every time I see them and every time I speak to them, I try to incorporate some of that teaching and try to express to them how important it is to know your history, know who you are, and value yourself. But it seems to fall on deaf ears. And they
take Well, one of the things, Alpha, that I say is that by the time a child is 5 years old. I mean, scientists will tell you this, medical researchers will tell you this. How a child thinks has been formed by the time they are five. So if you're not telling children, your young children, black power, black liberation, black people, and black history, and respect, and dignity and our story in the ways that they can understand it, then by the time that they're 15, you can't even begin to have detailed history, detailed culture conversations or political conversations because they don't see themselves in the context of what
That's
is
right.
happening in Washington.
So where
That's
are we
right.
going? What are we doing?
That's
what are
right.
we talking about here? Because if at this point they are not listening, and that's my whole point. When we talk about the youth, if they were all fine, the young people who could vote, they were all for. Okay, this African American man, he's got a message. He's talking hope and change, and we're with him. Let's go to the polls. Let's go to the polls. And they came to the polls, and then
mm-hmm.
they thought their work was done. And instead of them
Well,
staying
that's because
paid.
That's because we, there were a lot of young black people who got involved in Barack Obama's campaign. There was a lot of excitement. My own
mm-hmm.
young grandchildren were out campaigning for him every weekend, signs and door knockers and the whole nine yards.
Mhm.
But
exactly.
we were connected through an infrastructure that wasn't our own.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesse Jackson ran for president in 1984, we had organizations of black people. Black people. I was a chair of Brookline, Massachusetts, is a very elite community, blah, 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 in Massachusetts. I was chair of Black Citizens of Brookline. I didn't want to be on some committee or something. I wanted to be where Black people understood their interests who lived there. When we were campaigning for Obama, we were in somebody else's organization, the Democratic National Committee, the local Obama organizations, Move On, the whole nine yards. So by the time it came to fruition that this man was elected, we had no infrastructure in which to address him.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. When they had, well, he had an office down here in Nashville, and he never even came to the office. But they had received threats, and so the group that I'm with, we came out there and we secured that whole office. We secured that whole office just based upon of a threat, and that he would never even came to Nashville,
exactly.
Never even stepped foot in that
exactly.
office. Yeah.
Brother Muhammad,
we,
I'm going to let you go, and thank you so much for joining us.
Yes,
I've
ma'am.
Enjoyed your comments, and I've enjoyed your comments in our chat room. We've got to go on to some other callers. We're going to go to.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad.
Thank you. I'm getting confused here.
Brother Muhammad.
Let's see. 615. That was Brother Muhammad, and 754, you're on the air. I respect you, Hotep.
Hotep, what's going on? This is Brother Morbay.
Brother Morbay, welcome, my brother.
Assalamu
alaikum.
What's up? Alaikum
salam. Well, we're trying to sort all this stuff out.
Well, you know, I was listening to you guys there for a minute, and you said in the last 50 years, I'll put it back, if you go back 20 years, I was about 30 then, but I had already been raised to know my history. But if, even then, we were being dumbed down with not segregation at that point, but it was integration.
Mm-hmm.
We were too busy trying, our parents were too busy trying to follow that American dream. And
well,
so the kids were being left alone because they were working all long hours, so forth, so on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did say 20 years. I don't think I said 50 years because well, I was
okay,
thinking
okay, my
years.
Bad, my bad. So then we're about
yeah.
at the same point.
But you're absolutely right that our priorities were changed.
Exactly.
And in changing our priorities, we changed our mission as a community. We changed our vision and our hopes. Our hopes moved from our citizenry to things like getting out of our community, moving on, as we called it, and moving on up. I mean, even there was a television show that celebrated the idea that Black people lived in a high-rise, luxury high-rise apartment. You remember that? I don't know.
Yeah.
The Jefferson.
Mm-hmm. The Jefferson,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, it just really is And we're bringing this up, Brother Morbay, not to criticize, but for us to look at the richness that we let go for the 10 that we have now.
Right.
So my question is, how do we, you know, I love I did, Brother Morbay, I think I've told you this before. I've been wanting to change my name, legally change my name to Sankofa for maybe about 10 years, but I was scared to ask my mother. And Sankofa is a concept of returning to the icon, for those of you who do not know, the icon is the phoenix bird coming out of
the
ashes.
Right, exactly, out of the ashes.
And the bird has his head turned to the back. And the concept, Sankofa, means return to the source and fetch it. Go back getting what is meaningful in your life.
And we got to go back in time to get that.
You're absolutely right. We've got to reprioritize. We've got to decide, you know, for instance, black people criticizing WikiLeaks and saying it's against the country, it's against the government, it's against this, without some critical analysis of what it really means, because what it really means, and I want to thank De La Procha, who is in our chat room, of directing us to this editorial piece in the New York Times today, Why Iran Loves WikiLeaks. And one of the things that it says is that WikiLeaks aims to disrupt the established order by impairing its alliances and violating its proprieties. Doesn't that sound good? Does that sound like revolution to you, Brother Morbe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
straight up revolution.
We've got to reconfigure our community, our priorities about our children. You know, I listened to Alpho talk about how he tries to influence his grandchildren, and I try to influence, you know, people who are not. You know, I'm just a news junkie. I read loads and loads of commentary, opinion pieces, newspapers every day. And I try to influence that in my work with the people who work for me and the people who work with me, because we have to all somehow try to revive our intelligence, our natural inquiry, because it's not going to change our house music lover until we do that. I mean, you cannot... Perry Steele is in our chat room, and thank you very much for being with us today. But he and I have had this discussion for over 2 years. You cannot have an informed discussion if you are not informed.
Correct.
So,
our
you know, we've got to be about the business of restructuring and rebuilding our community. We need to do it on the issue of reparations, because if we don't support the notion of reparation, it means that we have no dignity in our own history. No dignity. And if you don't have dignity and honor your own history, that's why these people up here in Boston, the South Boston has the, you know, the Celtics have the little clover leaf thing, and they have their St. Patrick's Day thing, and St. Patrick's Day and the Italian Day, and the Greeks have their thing, because they're honoring their history. And they're doing it all the time through the way in which they support their community, in the way in which they protest on behalf of their community. You try to talk to some of these Italian people about Columbus, you'll get insulted, and they'll be in your face, and they won't care how you think about it. Brother Morbe is the founder of Black Unity, and we really recommend that you check them out at blackunity.ning.com. And Black Unity on their Ning site has a number of talk radio programs which are looking at issues of liberation and dignity and respect of black people by examining the issues that are before us. Brother Moore Bay, we're going to have to go. We got to take a break. But you're bringing up something, and Brother Muhammad brought the same thing. We have got to really decide who we are in America. And they are pointing out to us through their beatdown of President Barack Obama who they think we are. They want, when they say they want to take their country back, Brother Moore Bay, you know what they're saying, Alpho? Get on the back of the bus.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. They're trying, and they're going to see what we're going to do about it.
That's just what they're saying. That's just what they're saying.
Because my big thing is, things have gotten so bad that they are trying to put us back into slavery. They think we have.
They think we have become that dumb town. You look at the prisons in this country, and how many hundreds of thousands of us are back into slavery. Alpha said, "Well, what can we do about that?" Alpha, go ahead and say it.
Say what?
Alpha.
Say what?
What can we do about that? What can we do about that?
No.
Go on, say it.
No, I can't. Really. Just turn the damn keys in and get out now. And go back to Chicago. Janice, as we look at this uphill climb, and black folks have always had an uphill climb. Even when we were in segregation, it simply seemed to us to be an uphill climb because none of us recognized how good we had it when we were simply trying to be with them or like them. We have been so enamored, and as a people, we are so damaged by simply wanting to be like them or with them or as them. And over again, it is simply unmistakably, we have fallen for the okey-doke, we have fallen for the bovine excrement of this American dream. The American dream is not for the black man, because those African-Americans who achieve that American dream run from that African community, and they run as fast and as hard as they possibly can to get away from it, because they don't want to be influenced, nor do they want their children to be influenced, and that has been our biggest downfall.
Excuse me, Alpha, was that you that mentioned the 68, 67 report?
No,
that was Brother Muhammad.
Okay, because I read that same report. And just to say to Brother Muhammad that I read that also, that was really good, how they laid that out, how the whole thing was laid out for us.
For a Kwanzaa gift, I suggest to the audience that one of the books that you ought to give to young people is a book called Once Upon a Time When We Were Colored. And I can't think of the author's name right now, but we're going to be publishing, and that's why most of you should sign up to get the Our Common Ground newsletter, and you do that by becoming a member of ourcommonground-talk.ning.com. We're going to be publishing a book list for gifts for Kwanzaa. And I am just so pleased, Brother Morbe and Alpha, to announce that my dear, dear friend, who is an engineer and a scholar and a thinker, has finished his book And he's going to be our guest, Jamal Ali, next week at Our Common Ground right here at 10 p.m. He has written a three-part epic about our African spirit. It's a story that is so beautiful. I have finished the book, and if you go on to my Facebook and become friends at Facebook, or if you go to ourcommonground-ning.com, you'll be able to see my review of his work. And his name is Jamal Ali. So that's one of the things that we need to be doing, Brother Marbe. We've got to take our kids back, too. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
We've got to support
one another.
That's right. I've got to take another call, Brother Marbe, but thank you so very much for your call and for being with us once again. We always feel comfortable and feel inspired having you with us. 954, you're on the air. I respect you, Hotep.
And Hotep and Masalama there. Good evening to both of you. Happy Saturday. And the King.
How are you,
Sensei,
my brother?
This is Orande.
Orande, how are you?
Listen, I'm coming in late in on this, so just to pick up what I did get from this conversation, I don't see any future for here for us. And I remember when the Nation of Islam, when they saw the Muhammad Speaks paper, how they used to show the black man from America shaking hands with the black man from Africa across the globe. And when you mentioned support group, there was two episodes when you brought up the Good Times and the Jeffersons, too. The two episodes in particular, I'll be as concise as I can. The Evans, the father, had a gig offered to him for the Alaskan Pipeline. I remember that back in the 70s, you know, when I got out of the military. And that was the gig to have, and guys were making something anywhere between literally $1,500, $2,000 a week. Now, you know, the Evans lived in the projects in the Cabrini Green in Chicago. And he was going to only get $500, but the wife didn't want him to move on. And that was their probably way of getting up out of there. But the whole premise was based around him being with his youngest boy, Michael, and him not getting into the gang thing. Well, sacrifice does equal gain. And with the Jeffersons, they hired a young brother in this program that, you know, people that went to juvenile detention homes and that kind of stuff. And he stole the vest. But the thing is, the ending resolved that they gave the brother a chance, and he was calling them Toms and how they assimilated, and he ain't down with the real folks. When you know how they supposedly struggled to get up to that Hilux department up there on Park Avenue, wherever they're supposed to be living in Manhattan. Well, the point is this. I think we've maximized ourselves here. And we need to start thinking about branching out. And it's interesting that what happened with Israel with that fire in Haifa. I've been to Haifa before. And how many people in the world, communities, have come to help them. It's kind of a prophetic thing, next time by fire, so it states. I guess that's the wake-up call for them as a so-called religious entity, the European Jews that live in the continent of Africa. So stop looking to branch and internalize this system anymore. We have enough smarts. We have enough history to reflect on and to start amassing our energies elsewhere. The Chinese are definitely taking over Africa. They're the new landlords. And I've been in Ethiopia, and I'm hoping to get back over there pretty soon and over in the UAE as well as Southeast Asia. We need to start branching out. And Janice, I voted one time in my life in this country, and that's when Jesse Jackson ran, because Minister Farrakhan and everybody was backing that. And that was the only time other than when Shirley Chisholm was actually, you know, going to run for the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there was,
well,
a lot of embarrassment behind that, behind certain fools out there that I didn't like. But for the mere fact, she really started the gun, and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. would have been the next one in line. So I would like to ask the brothers in the Nation of Islam, what would they think about actually amassing and going back, you know, or setting up camp somewhere else, because we need to fish or cut bait here, man, because this ain't happening.
Yeah.
And there's no point in being any other delusions about this. As soon as we start to really think about that serious, watch how other things will start opening up. Just like these cats that are making these rap records, and how white folks used to tell them, oh, you got to get a crossover audience and all that bovine. So when black folks started supporting and buying their own stuff, oh, these record companies, man, we better cut these cats some deals.
That's a show of a whole nother kind. Oronde, thank you for your call. We've got some limited time here, and I'm glad to hear from you and hope things are well for you down there in Florida.
Take care, Oronde. To hear from you.
That was Oronde, and he is such a good family member of Our Common Ground. Hey, Alpha, I did want to get to this piece with Charlie Rangel, and I think that when we talk about the issue of dignity, no matter how you feel about Charlie Rangel, I think that what has happened to him and the way in which he was treated, which was, as far as I'm concerned, disparate, very different from how other members of the House have been treated, that we have to think about that the message that goes to him is also a message for us. Let's take a listen to a man who has performed his duties in a way that some of us might not be altogether have an approval about. We might not agree with everything and the way in which he did it, but he was under charges, in my mind, that certainly were not up to the bar of censorship. And we had to watch one of our own be dismantled. This was about humiliating him, and in humiliating him, the message was going out to us as well. Here's Charlie Rangel.
Embarrassed, awkward. Hey, if I was you, I may want me to go away too. I am not going away. I am here. And I do recognize that I'm not saying there's any partisanship in this, because if I knew of all the people that have been accused of accusations, I'm in a close district, and they were Republicans, I'd give a couple of moments of thought to see whether or not, especially if I didn't have anything to work with to get reelected, I would say, hey, take a look at these Republicans. They've been accused. But I don't really think that the unfairness of this is to me. I don't take it personally. I'm thinking about all of you. President wants dignity. Let's have dignity in this House where the Ethics Committee means something, and that none of you, if the newspapers say anything, will have to wait 2 years before you can say no comment. And in addition to that, once they make the accusations, they have no business making any mistakes in saying that I didn't cooperate. I got papers with my signature on. I got papers that said I tried my darndest. I got papers where my lawyer tells me she had every reason to believe that the full committee would sign on, that it was space for people to sign. I'm the only one signed. I don't know what changed their minds about settling this case, but my lawyer says don't offend them. My friends say don't go to the floor. And I say, what are you going to do me?
Yeah.
Suppose I do get emotional. Suppose I do think of my life, the beginning and the end. Are you going to expel me from this body? Are you going to say that while there's no evidence that I took a nickel, asked for a nickel, that there's no sworn testimony, no conflict, that I have to leave here? As much as I love you Democrats that think it would be easy for you, I'm the guy that was raising money in Republican districts to get you here. But that doesn't mean that I criticize you for saying, hey, that's great then, but I'm running for re-election now. I mean, do what you have to do. And Republicans, hey, you don't have much to run on, but, you know, but what the hell? I apologize to the leadership. I feel for those people, especially newcomers that love this place so much that, like someone said, Charlie, they all love you. And I paused and said, they finished it, but they love themselves better. I understand that, you know. But for God's sake, just don't believe that I don't have feelings, that I don't have pride, that I do want the dignity that the president has set. And the dignity is that even if you see fit to cause me not to be able to come back, because you're not going to do it in my district, but if there's some recommendation that I be expelled, for me, that would be dignity, because it shows openly that this system isn't working for me. And I hope some of you might think, if it doesn't work for me, that it may not work for you. If I can't get my dignity back here, then fire your best shot in getting rid of me through expulsion.
Well, that was how he brought it on. He said, bring it on. And that is how he did it. Well, what did you think, Alpha?
Well, first of all, just the entire process. You know, Charlie Rangel, was he careless? Absolutely. Did he do things that violated the ethics? Of course he did. Did it reach the height of this two-year-long dragging this investigation out? 2 years until it was time for midterms of 2010. And he continued to ask for his day, his hearing, his day in court, but they drug it out for political means as the Black Caucus sat back and watched one of their own being basically, you know, stripped of what they considered dignity. Now, despite and in the midst of all of these so-called charges, he won by 79% of the vote in his district. So they were a little disappointed that they drug this out so long and he still won with an overwhelming mandate. So now let's get into the censure part of it. Even the people on the committee agreed that nothing that he did rose to a level of to profit for himself. He squared away the problem with the IRS. Just the mere fact that he had his name on papers, somehow on letterhead to name some building after himself or someone, you know, the pettiness of this. And you're absolutely right. This speaks to telling us to know your place. Don't
exactly.
Be so uppity. But here's the here's another problem. You've got another Black Congresswoman, Maxine Waters, and she's called their bluff. They have gotten rid of two people on this ethics panel because after all was said and done, they continue to investigate her and continue to probe and fish and try to bring up things to expand this investigation on. This is nothing more than a total witch hunt on Black elected officials.
One of the things that I hope people understand, that what they did for, you know, it's like James Baldwin and Toni Morrison has warned us over and over in their writings, even up until the time of James Baldwin's death. And that is that they will come for him in the morning and they will come for you in the evening. And that's what this Black Caucus has to understand and they have to start living by. The other is that this was a message to Black America. Get to the back of the bus and you better be quiet.
Well, Janice, like I said,
if we can get Charlie Rangel, we can get you all.
Exactly.
You see, that's what we have to read into it. Before we go, we've got just a little bit time. I just want to tell you that I have posted in our chat room recommended reading about Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks. Alexander Cockburn, who has been a guest here at Our Common Ground, wrote a wonderful piece about understanding WikiLeaks. The other is I want to point out that President Obama pardoned 9 people, and none of them had sentences which were more than 5 years. None of them had crimes for which there was a question about the legitimacy of the judicial process in which they were either tried or sentenced. I think that's kind of pitiful, Alpha. I really think that it's kind of pitiful, and I'm posting in the chat room a link where you can go and take a look at his pardons list. It just bears down on the issue for me of how indecisive and scared. We've got a scared president. We've got a scared president. And all of us should be very, very nervous about our scared president. Alpha, another thing I wanted to mention, we're sending out our speedy recovery and get well wishes to Aretha Franklin, who underwent surgery this week, and Jimmy Carter, who collapsed in front of his house and was hospitalized. And we do want to honor and mention Margaret Burroughs, who is now an ancestor. She was the founder of the DuSable Museum in Chicago, and she certainly was one that earned peace as an ancestor. And Chicago and Black America should be proud of the work that she contributed to us. If you don't know that name, Margaret Burroughs, she is the founder of the DuSable Museum in Chicago. And I haven't seen any news about what's going on with Jimmy Carter. Aretha Franklin is not telling what's going on with her. We want to thank all of you. We want to thank Brother Muhammad for his call tonight. We want to thank Brother Moore Bay of BlackUnity.ning.com for joining us. And we've got Della Proza and Doc Don for his call, House Music Lover Jason X, Perry Steele and Raskinson and Tracy Gilmore in our chat room. And we want to thank all of you for joining us tonight at Our Common Ground open mic. Next week at Our Common Ground, Jamal Ali, A Heart to Remember. And you are going to love this book. It is in the spirit of Octavia Butler. And I'm suggesting to all of you that it is a book that you will want to read. I have read all 3 epics. They're written in a style of poetry, but it is a love story. It is a love story which takes us to the best of our Africanness. And I am so excited about having Jamal with us next week. As we promised, we want to close tonight with the rewrite commentary by Lawrence O'Donnell at on MSNBC in his commentary show on, I believe it was Thursday night, and we want to make him a man who stood up for black people this week, and we need one of those. Alpho, you are one of those, and I so appreciate you co-hosting with me. And we thank all of you out there who want to speak truth to power and to ourselves. I'm Janice Graham, and this is Our Common Ground. Good night, and have a great week.
Time for tonight's rewrite. It is hard to imagine a more profound breach of public trust than what happened here. So said federal judge Sarah Vance yesterday in what the New Orleans Times-Picayune reporter Brendan McCarthy called a scathing soliloquy at the sentencing of one of the New Orleans police officers involved in the Danziger Bridge massacre in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. There is indeed no more profound breach of public trust than police officers sworn to serve and protect becoming tormentors, torturers, and even murderers, as a gang of them did when they found a few unarmed, utterly innocent African-American men on the Danziger Bridge that day. New Orleans police officer Michael Hunter was given the maximum sentence yesterday after pleading guilty to obstruction of justice and failing to report a crime, the crime he was involved in. James Brissett, 17, was killed by gunfire from the police while on the bridge. Ronald Madison, 40, and mentally disabled, was killed by police shotgun fire. The officers falsely arrested this man, Lance Madison, initially claiming that he shot at police. Several officers have now confessed that he was framed. Threat to anyone. Appalling perversion. Savagery. A moral outrage. Sickeningly brutal. That is what Judge Vance called it yesterday. Before his sentencing, this story contains horrible particulars never known before, but sadly contains no fundamental surprise for African Americans. This, all too often, is their experience of police work in America. Most of white America experiences police work only by watching men in makeup with fake badges and fake guns on network television cop shows. The reality is police shoot and kill unjustifiably every year. The reality is their victims are wildly disproportionately African American and always have been. I wrote the first book that tried to bring this problem to national attention 25 years ago. Much has changed since then, and too much has stayed the same. What is still true is that most police cover-ups of these cases succeed. The truth is never known. What is also true is that white America and black America experience these stories differently. White America considers every one of them a rare aberration that has never happened before and will never happen again. Black America knows they are only learning the details in the latest chapter in a continuing saga of the worst kind of injustice. Police officers acting as police officers, prosecutors, judges, juries, and executioners in the instant they willfully decide to unjustifiably end a life. I'm not talking here about the totally justifiable uses of deadly force used by police officers. Any police officer who genuinely believes his or her physical safety is threatened has the right and, yes, the responsibility to use deadly force, and I fully support them in each one of those cases. This was not one of those cases. I was selfish and chose my career over my family and made some horrible decisions, said Officer Hunter yesterday at his sentencing. I apologize for not having the moral courage to do the right thing from the beginning. Apology not accepted. I would like to be able to rewrite Michael Hunter's statement into something more meaningful, something profound, but there are situations for which there are no words. There are some things for which an apology will never be enough. Michael Hunter is to report to the Bureau of Prisons on March 14th. He must do his time. He must testify honestly in upcoming trials about the conduct of his partners that day, and he must make every day of the rest of his life a living apology for what happened on the Danziger Bridge.
You have been listening to Our Common Ground. Thank you, our listening audience, our chatters, and especially to our callers. We'll see you next week, speaking truth to power and ourselves, transforming truth to power, one broadcast at a time, Our Common Ground.